Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight!
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, to the 145th episode of Dave's Gone By. And Happy New Year, hebraically speaking, on this October 6th, 2005. And I don't just mean Happy New Year Rosh Hashanah, which was a couple of days ago, but literally for this program. Officially, we began our third season the first week of September. I took 2 weeks off in August and came back and said, okay, it's the fall season, and jumped right in with, I think, some terrific shows. But if you want to get technical about it, the true third season, the actual year three, calendar-wise, begins tonight. Because we started Dave's Gone By back on October 6th, 2002, 3 years ago tonight. It was a Sunday, 11 p.m., late-night show on the weekend, since nobody knew what to expect. And the radio station wasn't about to take a chance with a prime-time show that, I couldn't describe at the time. I can't even describe it really now, because it wasn't just a comedy show. It wasn't a DJ music thing. It wasn't a Charlie Rose interview format, though it had all of these elements. And the first episodes were a little panicked, a little overstocked, since I was terrified of not getting through all the material in time, or, even worse, for me at that point, getting through all of it in 55 minutes, and God forbid having to fill 3 minutes with nothing written or prepared. Nowadays, like 3 minutes to me is like clearing my throat. 3 minutes is, hi, how are ya? And here's the last two things that just ran through my head, which is cool. You know, it took me a few months to get to that point. But throughout those months, the station believed in me, WGBB. We had a different program director at the time, a woman named Joey, who moved me to early evenings on Sundays, where the show stayed for nearly a year. And then there was some corporate turmoil, and the station moved its facilities from Merritt, Long Island, all the way out to Babylon. And I was on Monday nights for a good chunk of time. That was nice. But there was some more schedule maneuvering, and we finally settled into Thursday evenings, 7 p.m., where we have survived and thrived low these many months. And so, tonight marks the official third anniversary of Dave's Gone By, an occasion we shall now mark with a cavalcade of strange noises.
Do it again, do it again.
Wow, we are radio party animals tonight on Dave's Gone By. Very happy you're with us, and you should definitely stick around because we have another nifty guest visiting the neighborhood. It has been a bumper crop the last few weeks. Everyone from Frank Wildhorn to playwrights Greg Allen and Michael Weller to Jill Sobule, a great performer and an even greater sport, chatting with Rabbi Saul Solomon a couple of weeks ago. And now, we have actress and singer Paulette Attie. That may not be the most recognizable name to younger folks, so the first thing you'd say is, well, what has she done? And the answer is, what hasn't she done? Paulette has given about 1,000 concerts over the years, everywhere from Carnegie Hall to the Hollywood Bowl. On the acting front, she's ranged from all the big TV soap operas to half a dozen off-Broadway shows. She's won a bunch of songwriting and poetry awards, and according to her bio, she was Phi Beta Kappa at UCLA, and a week later, working as a Vegas showgirl. She had a radio show on WNYC where she interviewed dozens of musical and theater legends. and she was the voice of a cartoon character at Warner Brothers during the Bugs Bunny years. You'll have to stay tuned to find out which. And Paulette was the very first female member of the Friars Club. All that, and she's still going strong. Paulette Ati will be joining us in the neighborhood, interviewed not by me, but by a good friend to the program, Peter Fitzgerald. Now, Peter has been on every once in a while to talk specifically about gay issues. The Logo TV network, gay marriage, that Jimi Hendrix biography, which mentioned that he feigned homosexuality to get out of the military. That's Peter Fitzgerald's general milieu, because he is, as you know, the vice president of WiggleFAR, the Woodmere Gay Liberation Front, and Rear. Peter is generally our go-to guy for queries on queerness, but he's been after me for a while to beef up his role here. Or, as he put it, he wants a role to get his beef up. And since Rabbi Solomon has been getting a number of plum assignments, I couldn't very well deny Peter his shot at a little celebrity yak-yak. So, I figured a cabaret diva, a legendary showgirl, a woman steeped in Broadway and Hollywood musical history, would be right up his brown alley. Therefore, tonight, on Dave's Gone By, Peter will make his debut as an interviewer with a very gracious Paulette Ati. Let's wish him well, wish them both well, should be a lot of fun. And also tonight, if there is time left over, I do want to talk about the Mets. The season just ended, and the Mets once again did not make it over the playoff limbo stick, but there's definitely stuff to talk about, good and bad, so I'll weigh in for a few minutes on why being a Mets fan means always having to say, we'll get them next year. And we wouldn't be here this year, our third year, without the help of our sponsors. Hewlett Minuteman Press, the South Shore Kings of Copies, Performing Arts Insider, Theater Magazine, it's the Bible of Broadway, and our brand new sponsor, MortgagesRock.com. That's right, a cool website where you can learn to be a mortgage broker and discount lender. MortgagesRock.com. Thank you, Andy Leibowitz, for coming on board with the show. The show being Dave's Gone By, hosted by me, Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, humorist, journalist, and Met fan. Peter Fitzgerald is in the On Deck Circle with Paulette Ati right after this.
Hey, Dave's Gone By listeners. If you like hearing me, you love reading me even more. So hurry and get my book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, filled with hilarious plays that were performed in New York, like King Solomon the Wise and Blind Date. 232 pages of pure Dave. Only $20 hardcover, $12 trade paperback. To get your copy, call 516-295-1511 or visit the Dave's Gone By website. Are you filled with uncontainable rage against everything and everyone? Try the special Jimmy and Robin Stress Reduction Plan. 3 hours of hardcore punk, metal, and grunge rock mixed with wild comedy from a crazy crew. Visit JimmyandRobin.com and hear Jimmy and Robin, Midnight Fridays on WGBB. Feel better?
Hi, this is Paula Natsi. You're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB AM.
Hi, Paulette. Welcome. Welcome to Dave's Gone By. This is my first interview for the show. I'm so excited.
Oh, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled because you're an exciting person.
Yes, I'm excitable too. I must
and excitable.
Say.
So it should be fun. It should be a hoot.
I'm hooting already. Well, let me tell a little bit about you, and then we'll hear more about you from you. How's that?
Okay.
This is Paulette Ati, and she has been acting and singing and doing all these wonderful things since the age of 3 years old.
Well, just to remind you, it's almost right in the pronunciation, but you know how these artists are. They like to have their names pronounced correctly. It's at tea, as in at coffee?
At tea.
At
tea. Whoops. Whoopsies. Okay, let's try that. At tea. Is that perfect?
There you go.
Do I have to wait a long time between the syllables? Do I have to go like at T, or can I move them together a little closer?
A little longer.
At T. How's that?
At T. There you go.
All right. I don't even know, remember what my question was. Oh, I'm so flustered, and it's just my first interview. Oh, goodness. I'll pull myself together. I'm better. I'm good. I like myself, and people like me. Now, tell me about your debut at age 3, Ms. At T.
At T at age 3 was already a ham. My parents went to the Catskills. They took me with them. And it was the talent night, and I jumped up on the stage and started singing. And, of course, that applause got to me, and they could not get me off.
So did you take lessons, and did you learn to dance and act and things like that?
Not quite at 3.
Well, when you were 4 and 5. Oh, you are toying with me, Missy. Wow. But seriously, did you have to take piano, or did you want to
take... I did take piano lessons. I took piano lessons for a long time. And it stood me in very good stead, because as a singer, it's easier to learn music and songs when you can read music. You know a little bit about chord structure. And you know also, Peter, that I'm a songwriter and have won for the last 5 years the ASCAP Plus Songwriter Award. And so...
You know, the only thing about an ASCAP that I know is when you pull it out, it's really painful. But seriously, wait all.
It depends on if it has a head on it, the cap, or underneath it.
Wow, wiggle. But tell us, what were some of the songs that won?
One that won, which was a lovely one, is United Are We, based on as a result of 9/11. That was nice because it sort of took care of my needs. But then I needed to do something more, so I wrote a song called United Are We. And then I went to PS1, which was the closest school standing to Ground Zero. And I worked with the kids at PS1 for about 3 or 4 months, and singing, you know, working with music, and mm-hmm. It was a fun thing. And at the end of that time, we sang the song.
You know, they won't let me near children. I don't know why. Well, no, I do know why. But anyway.
No, I bet you'd be fun with children.
Jumping along a little bit, I noticed in your bio that at one point you were the voice of the girlfriend of a skunk. Is this true?
It's true.
What? Tell me, how did this happen?
Well, I think that was just a lucky deal, Peter, because I was quite young at the time. I didn't know that much about how hard something like this is to get. You know, to get cast or something like that. And Mel Blanc was the skunk, and he was called Pepe, as in Pepe Le Pew.
That's right, that's right.
And when I got to the studio, and he used to play 4/5 of all of the voices in all of the cartoons that he was in, sometimes all of them, because he was extremely talented and wonderful. And when I came in, you know, I was... Not him, you know. He wanted to do my part, too. So he was kind enough to allow me to do my thing, which was things like, oh, you know, and he was chasing, Pepe was chasing after this cat all the time.
Right.
Who didn't want to be near him because he smelled, as in a skunk. So I would do things like, le purr.
Ooh.
And he would... You know, that would just turn him on some more.
Let's do it. I'll be Pepe.
Yes.
And you, what was the name of your cat?
She was just the cat.
We'll
his
call
romance,
her...
his significant other.
His pussy. Let's say that. You were his pussy.
You might call her that, yes.
Okay. So I'll be Pepe, yes. And I'll be all mon chéri, moi, moi, moi. Well, this is very difficult for me because
you're
female.
No, you got it, Peter. You got it.
Mm,
wow. He would do the mwah, kind of thing. He would do that.
And you do your purring thing. Oh. Oh, mon chéri. Oh, she is hot for me, I can tell. Well, something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, did you do any other Warner Brothers kind of characters or thingies?
For a while, there was looping before they did this, before the subtitles became more famous and popular. But they would do the voices of foreign films, and I did a lot of that. And then one of the things I did, which is quite extraordinary, was Ingrid Bergman's last movie. Now, she speaks English, so I don't know why they wanted me to do the dubbing. But I did her voice, and of course I had to...
Wasn't her last movie Autumn Sonata or some Bergman thing?
I think so. I think yes. And I don't know why, but maybe there were things in it that were not... There were, you know, some problem with the soundtrack. And so I had to lip-sync her words, the exact words, as close, I can't do it for you now, I'm sorry, Peter,
but no
as
problem.
Close to her sound as possible, and nobody ever knew the difference.
Wow. Well, is this a trait? Did you just let the cat out of the bag? No, pun intended. Is it now an open secret, like Marnie Nixon in My Fair Lady? Oh, what a musical. I love that. Well, anyway. So, tell us more. Now, you know, I'm here on the radio by the good graces of my great friend Dave, and he has this lovely radio show, and he talks about theater a lot. But you have done that long, long ago. Tell us about your own theater show.
My own shows? In 1999, I had a one-person show called About Time. It was off-Broadway. We had a 10-week run.
Yeah.
And my musicians were a piano and a tuba.
And that's why it ran 10 weeks. But why a tuba?
Exactly. I had met Don Butterfield, famous tuba player, at Michael's Pub when he was playing the Marty Page arrangements for Mel Torme, which was an 11-piece band. And I used to follow Mel wherever he was because he's so fat. He was so fabulous. So at the, you know, while I was watching Mel, my eye would always divert to the end of the line, which is where the tuba player was. And he had something which you have, Peter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's something very special. It's called joy.
Oh.
And when I would look at him, there was such joy in his face when he was playing. And it just, you know, just so that was kind of like interesting. And when I was leaving, he was packing up his tuba, and we started talking. And then he said, can I drop you off? Because he had his car. He was going back to New Jersey where he lives. And we spent about 2 hours talking.
Oh, sure you did.
And in the course of it, we realized we had a lot of musical affinities. And I had a cabaret show coming up at Broadway Baby. And I'd already had the piano player selected. And I said, Don, would you like to play with me at this cabaret show?
I hope you rephrase that. Wiggle! Yeah. Can he show you his oboe? But, all right, yes.
No, oboe is a, what's that thing that's from Danny Kaye's song that bodes no good? An ill wind that bodes no good, I think.
Well put. Well, and so he said, yeah, and that's
how... He said, I'm honored. He said, I never have been offered anything like that. So what we had...
Well, tuba players wouldn't, would they?
They wouldn't. So we had arrangements made. So what was thrilling about this is that the arrangements showed the beauty of the tone of the tuba. Instead of just the oompah, we did some oompahs too, but more we showed, like we had a wonderful arrangement for With a Song in My Heart.
Mm.
And it just was so beautiful to hear that gorgeous, rich sound. And then, being a songwriter also, I wrote a song called The Elephant and the Songbird.
Could you do a little bit of that?
Well, you know why I can't quite?
Why?
Because I have a cold today.
I'm so sorry.
I promise I'll do it for you another time, if you'd like.
Okay, I will hold you to that.
I will, and it's adorable because it has little trills for the bird, and it has ba 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 ba. That's him.
Well, I could be the little trilling bird, actually. Okay, listen to me. No, I mean, listen to me on Compact Disc, where bunches of past episodes of Dave's Gone By are yours to hear over and over again. Comedy sketches like The Bad Dad Elections and Handyman Yoni, visits with guests like Reckless Eric and Julie Haggerty, punchlines and politics in the News Gone By, all just $12 a disc, shipping included. Visit davesgoneby.org or call 516-295-1511 for me on CD.
Hi, Dave's Gone By, this wonderful show that you can hear and stream in, has a particular guest today named Paula Dattie. That's me. It's over WGBB, and I'm being interviewed by the wild and wonderful Peter Fitzgerald.
I was asking before, not just about, like, theater shows, but you had a radio theater show, didn't you?
Yeah, I did have a radio show.
What was that all about?
When I first came to New York, I've always loved theater and music. I thought it would be wonderful to, I don't know where I got this idea, but wonderful to interview some of our great songwriters.
And who would you talk to?
Hmm?
Well, who did you talk to?
So I talked...
Come on, Missy, get with the program.
Okay, Arlen, Harold Arlen, Jerry Bach, Cy Coleman, I'm doing it in alphabetical order, Dorothy Fields, John Green, Johnny Mercer, Yip Harburg,
So, Dish, don't just say names. Tell me some wonderful stories. Tell me some wonderful memories of these people.
Okay, here's a story.
Oh, goody.
That's going to be in my show I have coming. I'm going to be doing a show about Harold Arlen.
Oh.
And it's about his collaborators. And one of the people I became really close to from that radio show was Yip Harburg.
Wow.
Yip, darling man that he was, sort of took me under his wing, sort of became my godfather. He said, "Do you have a godfather, Paulette?" I said, "No, I didn't." He said, "Well, I'm your godfather." And he would take me to the theater and discuss theater with me.
And you should remind people just what a wonderful songwriter Yip Harburg were. I mean, I know he wrote Brother Can You Spare a Dime, but what are some of the other things? He was some
number
of his...
one song of the past century?
Yeah.
Over the Rainbow.
He wrote that, see?
He is Harold Arlen.
And that was your godfather, in a sense.
My godfather. And only a Paper Moon.
Wow. It's only a paper moon. Yes, yes, oh, yes. Ooh, so tell more stories. Tell more about him and other people.
Okay, so he was not happy. The last song that had to go in for Wizard of Oz was the ballad that Dorothy was going to sing. And he was not... And Harold Arlen hadn't written it yet, so there's a whole big part about how Harold Arlen sweated through coming up with the melody for that. Then he finally got very excited, and he brought it to Yip, and Yip listened to it, and he says, "No, it's too classical, it's too for Nelsonetti, it doesn't belong to a young girl. It's not the kind of a song for a young girl." And, of course, Arlen was, you know, crestfallen because he really thought he had nailed it. So the next day, all of a sudden, Ira Gershwin arrives on the threshold, because they were all very close. Arlen and Yip, mm-hmm. and Ira Gershwin went to City College together.
Oh.
And they were very close, and they wrote together.
How close were they? Well, okay. Yeah.
Well, as close as peas in a pod. In whatever way you want to call it, but I call it very good friends.
Fair enough.
Fair enough?
I can wink. Okay, fair enough.
Thank you. They played it for Ira Gershwin, Harold, and Carol thought, "Oh, my God, this is death." And he describes it, and he laughs about it on the radio show, because he really thought that this was the end, and it turned out to be the beginning, because Ira said, "It's a perfectly fine lyric. It's fine." He didn't say it's great. He said it's perfectly fine. And then, of course, Harburg put his 2 cents in, to say the least, and wrote the wonderful lyrics. So this is the song he resisted, remember? He didn't want to do it.
Right.
So toward the very end of his life, I was having carrot juice that he made for me, and he was very unhappy because his two main composer collaborators, Harold Arlen and Burton Lane, were not active anymore. They were alive, but they were not doing anything. And he said, "I need someone to write with. I need a composer." And I said, "But yes, there are many wonderful composers who would love to work with you." And he said, "Yes, but where can you find someone who can write bum, 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 ba-da-bum, bum?"
Mm. A song like that comes around only once in a lifetime.
That's true.
Oh, now you've got me thinking about Judy Garland. You can make me start me thinking about Judy Garland. Oh,
really?
Excuse me. I need a moment. I need 2 moments. Okay, I'm better now. Tell more stories. Quickly, I don't want to obsess over Judy. Did you ever interview her? Did you ever meet her?
I did meet her.
How was she?
This was at the end of her life, and I was sitting at the table next to Harold Arlen at a do, you know, one of those big events that was at the...
Well, I make a do, it's a big event, let me tell you.
If you were there, it would have been even bigger.
Thank you.
It was at Lincoln Center, and she was the singer. And this was at the point in her life, this is, you know, at the very end, where she couldn't sustain notes, and she forgot lyrics a little bit.
Kind of like Ashley Simpson, basically.
Like whom?
Like Ashley Simpson.
Yes.
Over the head. Okay, no problem.
Over my
Keep
head,
going.
I'm sorry. Explain that one to me.
Oh, and she was a singer on Saturday Night Live, and she forgot, the band got the thing wrong, and she got the thing wrong, and then she started doing a hoedown.
Oh, that's cute.
The operative term being ho. Yes. Oh, you haven't heard about? Oh, well.
No, look at what I missed.
Yeah.
We'll have to have more discussions on our own.
Plop culture.
Fill me in.
Yeah.
On your memorabilia.
I filled a few people in, but they weren't of your persuasion. But okay, so we're sitting next to Judy, and?
And she's singing, and I am sitting next to Harold Arlen, even better.
Mm-hmm.
And when she started doing this thing, and he was there, of course, to be supportive of her, and he loved her. She was wonderful, and gave him a lot of hit records, and she was just wonderful. So when she started doing this, he just put his hand over his face because he didn't want to, you know, he didn't want to show his how it hurt him to hear her do that. And so I did have a chance to meet her.
So who, apart from Yip Harburg, who was your favorite all-time guest or famous person that you talked to?
I also love Dorothy Fields.
Mm.
I particularly loved her because, well, she was very modest about her extraordinary talents.
Kind of like me. Wiggle!
And she appreciated the fact that I had done a lot of research on her, and we also became friends. So that, I'm assuming, since I'm your first guest, Peter.
Yes, first one ever.
One of the very nice things is that you potentially can be friends with some of the people that you interview. And I nominate myself to be your friend.
Oh, good, because I always hit my friends up for money. Sunday nights at 7 on WGBB, Joe Salzone hosts a fast-paced hour of news and opinion, Worldview, which includes my theater segment, Broadview. Every Sunday at 7, it's Joe's Worldview, and welcome to it.
Dave's Gone By. Paulette Atty is the guest, and it's on WGBB AM. I'm delighted to be with you today.
Let me ask you a question here. I also noticed in your little bio thing that you were...
My big bio thing.
Your big bio thing. I have a big bio thing, but we won't go there. You were the first friaress. Tell.
I was the first woman to become a friar, and how that happened...
Yes.
...was that I was in Los Angeles filming General Hospital. And I heard that the Friars Club was opening their membership to women. So I had to apply. My father knew someone who was active in the membership, and he nominated me and got me a second. And then I had to go before the board and talk to them. And I said, you know, and they asked me why did I want to be a friar and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I hear that they're maybe opening up the clubs in New York, where I mostly live, and there's the Friars Club and the Players Club, which is a wonderful club, by the way. And they said, someone jumped up and said, this is how I knew I got it. He said, don't join the Players Club. The Friars Club has better food.
There you go. Oh, my goodness. So has it been, have you been active in the Friars?
Yes, I've been active. I should tell you another funny story.
Oh, please.
It was 9 months before they opened it in New York. So for a long time when I went back to New York, I was the only female who could go there before 6 or 7 o'clock and take a look at, the monastery or have lunch there. And some of the guys didn't like it that much. So I mostly stayed away, except one time when I was being shown around by Jean-Pierre Trebeau, who was the executive director of the Friars Club, and he brought me into the first time I was there in New York, and he brought me into the card room where there were guys who were heavy into a game of poker, and nobody looked up. They were all with their cigars and their cards, and you would love this kind of a place.
Ooh, the big cigars are getting to me, yeah.
And one of the guys, without missing a beat or looking up, said, what's she doing here? And Jean-Pierre Trebeau said, gentlemen, this is the future. And I will never forget him for that. He was wonderful to say that.
That was very nice. That
wasn't
was
that sweet?
Sweet, sweet story.
And you know, I took a lot of gaff at the beginning because they did not happily invite women in. There was always a certain group of people that resisted. Now they're delighted that women are in because we have some great women.
Well, who gave you the toughest time?
The toughest time?
Yeah.
I won't say his name, but a very famous...
Oh, come on.
No, I don't want to say his name. But a very well-known comic. Because it's not a nice...
Still name. Alive?
Yeah, he's still alive.
Ooh.
And we were working on the bill together in Florida. And he knew that I, you know, I very happily, proudly went up to him and I said, because he probably didn't know yet, you know, I'm a member of the Friars Club. And he said, why did you want to join this? Why don't you have your own club?
Ooh.
And this is the guy who I was working with every night. And he once he knew that I was a friar, he was very unhappy with me. Instead of being welcoming and welcome to the club kind of thing, he just didn't like it.
Well, you're going to have to tell me off the record who this is.
Off the record, I'll tell you, but not on.
So speaking of the friars, do you have your version of the aristocrats joke? Come on. I can edit the dirty words out later.
What's the aristocrats joke?
Oh, come now. Oh, don't tease a teaser. You've heard about the movie, the Aristocrats.
Go ahead, tell me.
Well, no, there's apparently this joke that has been going around since the old days of Bob Hope and vaudeville, even before then. That's just only comedians have told to each other until recently. And it's all about a person who goes into a talent agent's office with his family. And the talent agent says, well, what do you do? What is your act? And then they do all these incredibly despicable and disgusting things. You've never heard this joke. This is the joke that friars tell each other. I guess because you're a girl.
Well, honestly, there's so many jokes about like that. About the dog act that they bring into the agent's office.
Yes.
You know that one?
No, tell me.
Well, that's where the dog does... and there's another one. Oh, I'm going to tell you another one that I think that I've heard also... an ancient one, but funny. This is more your taste, actually. This
style.
The guy goes, he's billed as the man who has the most orgasms with women.
Whoa. Oh, right? It was good there for a moment, but then you brought the
most
women in.
Orgasms of anybody. And they fill the theater up with people to see this. You know, he does one right after another. And then the next, and then the next one comes up, and then the next one comes up, and the big night comes, and the theater...
comes being the operative term, yeah.
The theater is crowded, every seat is filled, and after about the 40th woman, he passes out. And the manager of the theater comes up to him, and he said, what happened to you? I had to give the money back. He said, I don't understand it. He says, it worked out perfect in the afternoon during the dress rehearsal.
That's funny. That's very cute. Next time you go to the Friars Club, ask Freddie Roman about the aristocrats joke and have him tell it to you.
Well,
just make sure you're sitting down.
No one can do it probably better than Freddie.
Well, no, that was the thing of the movie where it was the Hugh Hefner roast and Gilbert Gottfried was closing the roast and he did the joke. And it was so close after 9/11 that people were shocked he was doing it, but it just made everybody laugh all the more. I would say all the harder, but that would put a very different image in my head, if you know what I'm saying. So tell me, you've written a book?
Yes. We're getting into a different territory here. It's called The Seven Keys to Living a Masterful Life.
Seven Keys to Living a Masturbatory Life. That's me. No, wait, say that again. I think I might have missed the word there.
The Seven Keys to Living a Masterful Life.
Oh, masterful. Sorry. And what are the... Give us four of the keys, and then you have to buy the book to get the other three.
Okay. The first key, this is a little, you know, as I said, this is a change from the show business, although I use a lot of examples about music and the theater in the book because I know so much about music and the theater. So there's some wonderful examples. But the first key is, are you ready for this?
I'm bracing myself.
Okay, it's called disidentify. It means that you can still be part of an experience but not be emotionally charged by it.
Well, that sounds kind of a dull way to live. You know, I think I would rather be attached and into it, as it were.
Well, I mean, so the idea of to disidentify is that you don't get caught up in the whirlwind of ups and downs, highs and lows, depression.
I do that every hour of the day.
I know, Peter, and it's fun. But it is fun. I do too. But there are times where to save your soul, your body, and your spirit, and your, you know, just your well-being, it's good to look from a higher vantage point and perspective of things.
So in other words, it's sometimes good to be on top. Okay. What about number two? What's number two?
Is faith. If it's not blind faith, you know, you're not just doing it because you're told that you're supposed to believe in this or that or the other. But faith is, like, again, a higher level. It's like disidentify as a higher level of detachment. Because when you have true faith, you don't always have the five senses confirming that you're right. It doesn't always show up in your eyes, your ears, your nose, and your sense of touch.
It does if you've had a good weekend like I have, but you know, okay.
Okay, then the next one is an easier one, which is love.
Oh, well, now we're on the same page.
Okay.
Wiggle, love, yes, love.
That's an easier one.
And then four?
And four is something that you also have.
Oh.
And that is fearlessness.
Ooh, wiggle, yes.
And that's an important one in life because a lot of people, you know, Peter... Again, this is a different part.
Oh, I know Peter. Yeah.
You know, this is. I'm sure you already said. You already changed the word from masterful to your own word. So you understand. You know Peter. We're living in times where it's very hard not to be afraid of what's going on, and to buy into the fear and to look at your television set at all the disasters, and go, oh my God, whichever disaster is going on at the moment. I won't go into what includes because I don't want to get too political here. But
no, that's fine. Believe me. If you know me, you know that for many reasons I hate Bush, if you know what I'm saying. So
it's very interesting because I actually received a letter of thanks and congratulations from him for the work I did with the children on 9/11 and for it being on television and all that.
Well, of course he was busy reading to children on 9/11. It took him 10 minutes to put down the book. He was so engrossed.
Right.
Oh, the furry little bunny hopping across the... Don't disturb me. I'm reading here.
Right. And here's something. Here's interesting. Something interesting, Peter. I just got it. That's fun. When I got the letter, I did not honor it as much as one might normally honor it when one gets a letter from the President of the United States. And this is how the Seven Keys helps you to see it in the bigger picture. He was doing his duty of state.
Yeah, duty being the operative term.
Yeah, I mean, sending a letter, that was his duty, you know. He knew about what I was doing. And to separate that from who he might be as politically, who he is politically, and to take the loveliness of receiving a letter from the President of the United States and be pleased about it, apart from how I might feel about him, as a leader. And that, it took a little bit of doing to get to that place.
Well, that's kind of like, you know, John Lennon decided to throw back the OBE, but Paul McCartney kept his. So, different sides of the same coin, I would say.
That's right.
Anyway, Paulette at T. I'm afraid we do have to wrap things up a little bit. But tell us what else you're working on a Harold Arlen show, and what else is coming up in your life?
Well, let me just mention that there's a lady I'm working with named Francesca James, who is a 5-time Emmy Award winner, and she's quite extraordinary. She's brilliant and a wonderful human being, so that's a pleasure.
So what are you collaborating on?
The name of the show being Collaborators.
Oh, duh. Sorry.
And other things that I have coming up, I do a lot of one-woman shows where I sing and I do poetry. I'm such a showbiz kid, Peter, that it's so in my blood, it's from age 3, as you know,
right.
That there are always people who want to have me perform there, whether it's an art center, even a senior center, or a concert hall. I've done a lot of traveling. I've been in Japan singing, Mexico a couple winters ago.
I mean, I've only been to Mexico once, but I don't remember a minute of it. And I was actually in the trunk, so I don't really discuss that very often.
You were in a trunk?
I was in the trunk, yes, of the car that was driven by some very naughty friends of mine. Oh, it was fun, but
right over the border and back.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I don't discuss it very often, but it was fun. Well, Paulette. It has just been fabulous talking with you and finding out about your life and the people you know. It's just marvelous. We definitely have to do this again. So thank you so much for being with me, Peter Fitzgerald, on Dave's Gone By.
Anyway, thanks for the wiggles and your good personality, and I look forward to meeting you in person.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Peter.
D is for Dave, F is for fun, S is for silly and special, X is for excellent entertainment, DFSX Internet Radio, playing vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By, Thursday nights at 8 and 11. It's part of Live 365, but all you've got to do is visit davesgoneby.org, click the link, and listen online to classic Dave's Gone By, Thursdays 8 and 11. DFSX, letters that stand for terrific!
You want to buy a watch? No? How about a dishwasher? Vacation to Europe? Well, what's wrong with selling my stuff this way? How else? Advertise? On Dave's Gone By? Take a 30 or 60 second ad on the radio? I can't afford that. I can. And I'll reach thousands of listeners all over America? How do I... Dave'sGoneBy.org has all the info, huh? Rate card and everything? Done deal! Hey, before I go... Want to buy a raincoat full of watches?
Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off.
At the very beginning of the baseball season, back in the middle of April, I opened Dave's Gone By episode talking about a bunch of stuff, including the fact that the press and media had really gotten on the New York Mets when they lost the first five games of the season. Remember that? That very first game was real close. I think it went into extra innings. And then the Mets lost in the bottom of the 10th. And then that took the wind out of their sails, and they lost the next five. And already they were saying, how long will manager Willie Randolph last? And how many people are they going to trade? And are there really going to be another lousy team this year? And I, to my credit, said, moderation, folks. It's a long, long season, even in so much as the fact that with a wild card, a team could be downright mediocre the whole year long and play 450, 470, 480 ball and still have a shot at the playoffs and not be eliminated, really, until towards the end of August. And so that is what happened. The Mets showed a lot more promise this year than they did the last 3 years, and they won more than 10 games more this year than they did the last, which to me is the greatest mark of improvement of all. You know, if you can win at least a few more games the year later than the year before, even if you don't make the playoffs, even if you don't get within hollering distance of the World Series, the fact that you've significantly improved is something worth taking note of and applauding the team and the manager for. So I'm recording this segment just a couple of days before the end of the season, and it looks as if the Mets will be at 500 or a little over for the season. It's, again, for people who are only playoff and series oriented, it's like, well, stale donuts. Who cares? But for people who care about a team, and I've been a Met fan since the early 1970s, die hard, and I've certainly died hard a few times with the New York Mets, but kind of nice to say, okay, the year could have gone better, and they shouldn't have had that horrible, horrible road trip. But then again, look at recent past years, when they were doing okay, they were playing roughly 500 ball, and then they would tank in July. They'd lose like 25 out of 30 games in July. And the following year, they were okay through July, but then in August, they just absolutely imploded and bleh. This time, they waited at least until a long road trip in September to conk out. And the fact is, because they were at 500-ish, through it. At one point, there were actually eight games over 500 before the skid. Even coming out of the horrors of the road trip, they were still in contention and did not technically get eliminated from the wild card slot until about five or six games before the very end of the season. Now that's pretty darn cool. And remember, it's not as if the Mets were playing in the National League West, where the very best team can barely touch 500. The Mets, you know, had to be in the same league where the Atlanta Braves have won year after year after year. And even though in the early part of the season it was anyone's division for the taking because the Braves weren't coming on strong, towards the end of it, yeah, well, the Braves did. And they're going to wind up, I think, something like 15, 20, maybe 25 games over 500. So let's hear it for the Mets to some extent. What else do I want to say about all this? Just giving kind of a baseball wrap-up because I'm going to miss it. You know, I really got into it more this year than recently because I'd work and write and work on the magazine while listening to the Met games on radio, which I enjoyed actually even more than watching it on TV for some reason. Of course, there's Pedro Martinez to talk about, who was mostly great until the end of the season. You know, they pulled him out of the last couple of games just to save him for next year. Okay, whatever. He brought excitement, and he wasn't always perfect, but he really could pick up the team. And there were times when everybody was moaning and groaning, and the Mets are just losing, and there's no energy. And then it would be Martinez's turn in the rotation, and people would be like, oh, Pedro's back. And for the most part, he'd show up for the game and, you know, and kick it. He'd do it. I remember one time he lost a game that was almost a no-hitter, but you know, came right back and then won another game very soon after that. Another person that may not be getting quite the recognition that he deserves would be David Wright, just simply because, as I've said for a long time, when you bat over 300, what that means, it's a very simple thing. One out of every three times that you are at the plate, you're going to do something good. You know, might not necessarily be a home run, although Wright has had a few of those. Might not be doubles or stuff, but you're going to get on the base. Like Mookie Wilson was like that in the 80s years for the Mets, who I was always admired a great bit because he could run and he always tried hard and he got on base. So David Wright batting about 310 or so, if a couple of the other batters on the team had that average instead of 250, 270, you would have seen the Mets really battling for the playoffs against the Braves instead of sort of being out of it during that road trip. You know, Beltran were 300 instead of 270. Piazza, of course, if he were 270 instead of 250, and he could still throw people out at the plate, and he was there more than a third of the year. And again, you know, the Mets also had their rough times. I should also mention Cliff Floyd, who would pick the team up and get home runs here and there at just the right time. You know, didn't always work out. The pitching and the relief pitching, Looper was not quite reliable enough. And then there was, during sort of that sticky middle period, when the Mets just could not push themselves really for a surge. They could get over 500, then go a little under it, then a little over it, but couldn't put together a real string. And they have pitchers, relief pitchers like Danny Graves. Where did they? I'm talking about that last name. I think they sent him finally back to Hawaii. But you just knew every time he came up there, he'd either lose the game or he wouldn't be effective or he'd give up an important tying run. And in fact, it got so that the last few times he would pitch, they'd bring him in when the team was up by 8 runs. Because they all right, he might give up 3 or 4 or 7 runs, but he's not going to give up 8. Let's put Danny in there. You know, Tom Glavine has really shown a lot of heart, though. He may not be the pitcher he once was, of course, but he's a real pro. He may be like Piazza, though, at the point of diminishing returns, but I think a really young team that won't be poised, let's say, like the Mets hopefully will be next year to make a real run for it, he could be a real asset to that team, or maybe still an asset to the Mets. So anyway, in closing, you can second-guess the Mets and the managers all you want to, but again, it really does come back to the fact that they were improved. Maybe it was a little bit of luck. Maybe the addition of Mike Jacobs, who got home run after home run in the first couple of games, then cooled off, then got better again, and maybe a very promising regular hitter as well as a long ball hitter, which would be nice. Or it could be a fluke, and or maybe traded away because he'd be really valuable considering the way he played in the second half of the season. You never know. It is a horse race, and injuries are always partly... Of course, that collision didn't help either. Forgot to mention that. Even though the Mets did not immediately fall apart after it, it had to have kind of a psychological effect. Not just physically losing Mike Cameron, but seeing just how fragile players can be and knocking two people out of the lineup so quickly, even though Beltran obviously came back very soon. It can take a toll on a team's psyche. But they pulled through. They came back after losing that on that terrible road trip to win some more games, to battle back to 500, to really care, and to be a team not to be terribly, let's say, excited about or thrilled with, but somewhat cautiously proud of. Let's hear it for the 2005 New York Mets. Now, as far as football goes, and the New York Jets...
Oh my God, the wedding is next month! We need flyers, invitations, booklets, Irving, we are screwed!
No, we're not, Burl. We'll just go to Hewlett Minuteman Press.
Hewlett Minuteman? What can they do?
Printing, engraving.
Really?
Letterheads, souvenirs.
Wonderful! Are they still at 1315 Broadway in Hewlett?
Yep. 516-569-5577.
Well, stop dawdling, let's go!
Yes, dear. Day after the wedding, I kill her.
What's playing on Broadway? I'll tell you what's playing on Broadway, and I'll do it by checking Performing Arts Insider. Off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, off-off-off-Broadway. You keep adding offs, they'll keep adding listings. Who's in the cast? What's it about? Why is it special? Performing Arts Insider is Broadway the best way. 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511. Or see PerformingArtsInsider.com.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Big thank you to the lovely and funny and talented Paulette Ati and to Peter Fitzgerald for doing the interviewing honors. Peter, you did fine. This was your very first interview for the show. I'm sure it will not be your last. Speaking of interviewees in the neighborhood, gotta do a couple of plugs. First of all, our old friends October Project are doing another loft concert in Soho, October 14th and 15th, next weekend. If you've never heard of October Project, for gosh sakes, go on Amazon, go to Tower, get their albums, some of the most beautiful pop music you've ever heard, and see them in concert next weekend. All the details are at octoberproject.net. Also going to give a shout-out to Dr. Elmo. Yes, the man who wrote and sang Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer and was a merry guest in our neighborhood a while back. He's got a new CD out on CMG Records, which is an arm of Sony BMG, no less. Just in time for Halloween, it's Dr. Elmo Sings the Booze, B-O-O-S. Comedy novelty songs on the spooky side. Titles include Texas Chainsaw Halloween, Redneck Dracula, Haunted Hoedown, and the scariest one of all, Global Warming. Dr. Elmo Sings the Blues on CMG Records. And hey, thanks to the folks who wrote back when I was singing the blues, tongue in cheek, which is a difficult way to sing anything, let alone the blues. I mean, you end up sounding like, "Hello, this morning, with my tongue in my cheek. Hello, this morning, and I can barely speak. If I don't find myself a dentist, oh, I'm really up a creek." Well, but anyway, in my weekly email alerting people to who's going to be on the show, I mentioned that I was a little jealous of last week's guest, playwright Michael Weller, because he had an off-Broadway theater named after him. So I sulked and wondered when, if ever, I'd get something named after me. Didn't have to be a theater. Could be a sandwich, like the Larry David, or a disease. I make a really great disease. And I got back a couple of really sweet emails. Anne of Milwaukee wrote, "Dear Dave, in response to your plaintive inquiry, we have decided to name our new cat after you. It is a 4-month-old kitten. It is a female. We can't do anything about that. But from now on, her name will be Callie Lefkowitz. Aren't you thrilled?" Well, Anne, yes, I am. I'm elated. And I always thought the only way you could give your name to a pussy was to marry her. Now, but seriously, thanks also to my cousin Judy, who responded sagaciously to my whining. While I complained that nothing's ever been named after me, Judy wrote, "Dear Cousin David, don't feel bad. Your website is named after you." Well, goddamn, you can't argue with logic like that. Thank you, Cousin Judy. Thank you, Anne. Thanks to everybody who wrote in and writes in every week. DavesGoneBy@AOL.com is the address. DavesGoneBy.org is the website. And the sponsors are Hewlett Minuteman Press for all your printing needs, Performing Arts Insider Magazine for 62 years, the Theater Bible, and yes, our brand new sponsor, MortgagesRock.com. This is a website for everybody who wants to take the plunge into the still exploding real estate market. Even if you're not looking to become a broker or a lender, maybe you're thinking of selling your house or just wondering how the whole seemingly complicated process works, MortgagesRock.com gives you the clear, truthful facts. With everything from a glossary to helpful checklists to a rate calculator, MortgagesRock.com. If you're on DavesGoneBy.org, click over from the banner on my homepage so we get credit for the traffic. Hey, every little bit helps, folks. And big thanks, as always, for the help of Program Director Tom Ross and for the help, love, and support of my beloved wife, Joyce. I will not be here next Thursday. It's the tail end of Yom Kippur, but the station usually plays repeats of older episodes, both of Dave's Gone By at 7 and my all-music show, Filler Up, at 9, so do tune in for both. And then the week after that, October 20th, I will be back with the 146th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Remember, it's all in your attitude. And gone by.
Well, there's a little something that's been freaking me. I'm reading in the news, I've seen it on TV. It haunts me in the night and greets me in the morning. A spooky little thing called global warming. It seems our indispensable amenities, like airspray, air conditioners, and SUVs, are causing big emissions, all of which are forming a spooky little thing called global warming. Fluorocarbons strip away ozone. We can't seem to leave the rainforest alone. Our temperatures are rising and it now deduces the vampires of progress have come home to roost. Well, I always drive the freeway in a bulletproof vest. Have fiber in my diet and a blood pressure test. But this one is a doozy which requires forewarning. A spooky little thing called global warming. Now, baby, you know what I like. But honey, your Hummer is Mother Nature's bummer. Solar is sexy. Carpool is cool. Only a ghoul digs fossil fuel. Prepare for damning droughts and hellish hurricanes. Record-breaking heat waves and torrential rains. The gods are getting peevish and they're crying foul. The werewolves of progress are starting to howl. Now people follow me, this planet can be saved. I'm moving from my condo back into a cave. Cause natural disaster's gonna keep on swarming from that spooky little thing called global warming. Watch what you drive, watch what you do. Cause global warming is gonna get you.